Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Previously on Financial Therapy from Death, Sex, and Money.
Do you guys have any sort of regular money talks with each other?
No, we've tried, but it's never worked.
Like, I used to have kind of like personal goals monetarily, and I don't feel like I have any because I don't feel like I have that control.
I think my fear is like seeing you, you know, choosing to do things that spark an interest in the addict part of your brain.
You don't have to worry about me making drastic decisions that are going to alter our life.
I still feel like I don't get let in fully.
This is Financial Therapy from Death, Sex, and Money. I'm Amanda Clayman.
And I'm Anna Sale. Over the last few weeks, we've been sitting in on financial therapy sessions between Amanda and a married couple we're calling Cora and Garrett. Amanda is a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in helping people sort out their money issues. And if you missed the first two episodes before this one, go back and listen to those first.
I met with Cora and Garrett over 2 months earlier this year. In our sessions, we talked about all that's changed in their relationship since Cora learned about Garrett's secret gambling habit and $18,000 gambling debt. We also heard more about his suicide attempt late last year. Garrett is an ironworker, and Cora is a teacher and artist. And as we talked about their feelings about money and how they communicate about it, they were also working hard to pay down that debt.
Cora and Garrett now have another big change ahead. They're expecting a baby next month.
How are you guys doing today?
I'm so tired and feeling very pregnant today.
In this final session with Amanda, Cora and Garrett talk about their future as a family of three. And they started things off by telling her about their recent appointment with a financial advisor.
Tell me how that came about.
I was talking to my mom, just kind of like, I still don't know what I'm doing, and blah, 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 blah. And then she was like, well, we see this really great guy, and he's super good at being neutral because your stepdad and I have a lot of money, you know, complex too. And he's been really good for us to talk to. So we were like, well, why not? So we made an appointment with him, and it was like on a Friday after work. So then of course we were like, oh yeah. But then we did it, and it was, what did you think of it?
Yeah. He's just very, matter of fact, you know, he's not privy nor interested or committed to our emotional state about money. So it was nice to hear, a third perspective, fourth perspective on where we're at right now and what we can be doing.
What kind of advice did he have?
He talked about having goals, like having a 6 month savings, 6 months of expenses saved, and then how to approach buying a home, things like that, that were kind of like based around the things that we are kind of aspiring to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was very like nice and neat and not, you know, messy, I guess, or muddled. It was just very clear cut. But also we were able to talk a lot about ourselves and what, you know, it's going to look like when we have a baby and how that will change things, because that's something that's been on our minds a lot.
Did you guys talk to him about a timeline? So like there are goals around saving for the emergency fund, goals around saving up for a housing down payment. Did you talk about where debt fits in to these other goals?
We told him all the numbers. So calculated the numbers based on where we were at right now. He said, okay, so based on that, you should be able to either eliminate a majority of your debt by, you know, by, I think it was something like a year or a year and a half or something like that. And then he said,
you need to eradicate the debt before anything else.
Yes. That's what he said. Yeah. So, but the general timeline, I think, for everything was somewhere in the matter of 3 years or so, I think.
To me, it felt really nice to have it laid out a little bit more. Like, I was feeling like I wasn't capable of handling it, like doing the math, basically. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, pretty cut and dry, actually. Like, I'm overthinking it. Like, I'm doing it right. I just, like, all those, you know, spreadsheets I built when I was freaking out before are actually going to be really helpful.
Great. So it sounds like it affirmed too your sense of like, okay, we have the capability to do this. We can trust our own assessment and our own judgment here.
Yeah, because I think what, like, the mistake I made or we made, I think it started with me, was like calling these, you know, like debt forgiveness places or consolidation places, like these financial wellness companies, and asking for advice and like them basically selling, like trying to sell a product, you know?
Yeah.
And then he was able to say like, no, yeah, it's really messed up that you have this debt, but also it's totally okay and you can get past it and like, it's very attainable.
And Garrett, how do you feel about that? When you heard that perspective,
I had a lot of faith in Cora's financial aptitude, like right off the bat, and like we spoke about before, it was kind of a weight off my shoulders a little bit to have somebody else taking care of the finances and kind of give a little bit of a respite for that. So when he said, you know, okay, based on, you know, making these three set kind of decisions, eradicate the debt, eradicate it.
I liked that word.
That was really affirming.
But also we did talk a little bit about the fact that Garrett is in recovery and, you know, has this history that is the reason we have this part of this debt. And, you know, he said part of that recovery also needs to come with some like a budget for him to be able to do things that he enjoys, because that gives like positive steps forward and like a reason to go to work, you know, like how we had talked about how hard it is when things are tight. And then Garrett's maybe gets to a dark place and is like, well, why am I even working then if we can't, you know? So I feel like I was able to be like, okay, no, it's okay. Like we should once in a while do some nice things. And like he made an Amazon return for like work stuff. Mm-hmm. So I got some new clothes at Kohl's, like on super sale. But like it was like, you know what? Yeah, like we do sometimes need new clothes. Things that I honestly am like, nope, we don't need that. So I guess things like that still make me nervous when there's like debt involved, but I feel like that like gave me permission to be a little freer about that.
And Garrett, you told him about getting into a dark place when it comes to money. You talked about that.
We talked about my issues with gambling and why the current kind of setup is the way it is, as far as who's handling the finances. Cause that was one of the leading questions. Like how do you handle finances? Do you do it together, or, you know, somebody, the primary financial person?
Yeah, it kept getting awkward because then he would be like, wait, why do you not do it together in some way collaboratively? We were like, oh. And so it did end up coming up. But I don't know how you thought about that. But I know that.
Well, I mean, it's not the most comfortable thing to talk to somebody about. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I would have preferred that we didn't have to mention it, but it's kind of like the elephant in the room a little bit with coming up with a system.
Yeah.
This is the thing that is maybe different between like straight financial advice and financial therapy, is that there may need to be a period of kind of digging into the mess, if you will, of what stands between where you are today and where it is that you'd like to go. It's not as simple as, here's the perfect sort of way to organize this, now just go do it. I mean, if that was the case, I would have zero clients, because that's essentially my business model is all about, like, the reasons that we can't do the things that, or we don't feel ready to do the things that are that we're supposed to do when it comes to money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's not always that cut and dry.
I'm thinking that it may be helpful to reframe the way that money has taken on the category of chore in your life. If we can instead move money from that chore category into more of an intimacy builder or potential intimacy builder, and instead of saying, I want to opt out of this and hand it over to you, to think of this as a place where you really get to build something together. And that this is a place to solicit your partner's participation and input. So think of money as an opportunity for you to share some of these things that you might be more inclined to hold back. Like, I know, Cora, for you, we talked about like sometimes you get anxious because you feel like, is Garrett really okay? Or is he not okay and he's hiding his not okayness from me? Mm-hmm. And to make a practice of it being okay for you to come over and go like, knock, knock, is there a wall here? And Garrett to go, hey, there's a door. Look, I'm showing you the door. And what's behind the door? And the answer is either like, yes, there was something here maybe that you were sensing, or nope, I'm totally good. But you, Cora, get reassured by just not having to hold on to, like, am I being needy? Am I being judgmental? Is he going to react in a negative way if I share this, the fact that I'm feeling really anxious and disconnected? And that in itself becomes an opportunity for connection.
Well, and it has been an opportunity for us, for sure. Like, I feel like we had that conversation and I've been, like, able to ask that more. And you've been, you know, Garrett, you've been like okay with me asking it, you know. But also, I think we've been better about checking in with each other in a way that isn't assuming that there is something wrong, but instead just be like, how are you feeling and what's on your mind? And that's been really good.
More of Cora and Garrett's last session with Amanda after the break. Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
This is Financial Therapy from Death, Sex, and Money. I'm Anna Sale. Last year was a difficult one financially for Cora and Garrett. They both lost work due to the pandemic. And while they both received some unemployment, Garrett spent much of his on gambling. That habit added to their credit card debt, which they held on top of student loan debt. And then after Garrett's suicide attempt last year, there was medical debt, about $2,000 in unpaid hospital bills. Since the start of this year, though, they've both had steady work, and Cora's been making payments on their credit card debt, which has the highest interest rate, every time they both get paid.
Every time Garrett gets a paycheck, he will send me a mostly chunk of it and then save a little bit of it and tell me what he's doing with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, and then we'll have like a text conversation, you know, like on Friday morning or whatever, or we'll talk after work about what he's planning to do with that money. And like, what, like sometimes I'll say, you know, this is the big chunk of debt that I'm paying off with this other money. And then he'll be like, well, can we pay our rent if you do that? And then I'll be like, yeah. And then since we had the conversation with the financial advisor and I really looked at the numbers, I was like, oh, we can pay this off a little faster right now because of the way things are doing, and then save some money. And so we actually just got done paying off the credit cards, which is super exciting.
Wow. Hey.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I'm like super happy about it.
I see this big smile on your face. I see you guys looking at each other.
Yeah. So that's like a big, you know, that's one less thing looming over us. And then we have what?
Yeah. Agreed.
Are you annoyed?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Okay.
I don't want to interrupt. I'm literally listening to what you're saying.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
So.
Knock, knock.
I'm feeling like maybe you're annoyed with something that I said.
No. Oh my gosh. No. I literally did not want to interrupt what you were saying.
I'm checking in with you okay. Right now.
Well, no, I don't feel that way. I was just trying to be an active participant in the conversation and not interrupt you. Literally, that's it.
Did you have something you wanted to add? Just nodding my head.
All I wanted to add was, yeah.
Do you guys feel like job well done? Like, do you feel proud of yourself and or selves and or each other?
I do, but I haven't. I feel like when I'm like, we paid off the credit cards, I'm super excited. And that Garrett maybe isn't as excited as I expect him to be.
I'm not that excited.
Or wish he would.
How about this? If you are feeling like you would like praise for this, you can literally say, and this is so cheesy and I recommend it to all my clients and I do it in my house as well. This is a tool I came up with literally for myself. And it is called, I would like praise.
I
looked at the numbers and I determined that we could pay off our debt faster and we paid off this credit card and I would like praise.
Yeah, I guess that is part of it. But I also feel like I feel personally connected to like wishing that he would want praise, which isn't my place, but like, or wishing that he would be proud of himself too, because he's been working really hard for that.
Well, do you want praise?
Well, yeah, but like I see, yes, I love that technique and I think that's a really good idea, but it's like this like mutual thing where I'm like proud of us though. Like there's me and there's him and then there's us, and I'm like proud of us, but you're not proud of us, I can tell, and that makes
me not that I'm not proud of us. That would be not a accurate way of describing it. I'm just not jumping out of my socks or whatever. I'm just not head over heels about everything, because I know that this is just one stage. Don't get me wrong. And I feel almost more stressed about it than I do feel like willing to be congratulatory about my, you know.
Yeah, so that's why I don't really bring it up.
You've done an excellent job monitoring the finances. And for what it's worth, your fiscal responsibility with the money that you are contributing to everything is pretty amazing.
Thank you. But like, I guess what I more want is that you can look at our relationship from your individual vantage point and be like, okay, we did a good job
yes, something. You're right, we are on our way.
No, we did a good job at this step of the way.
Okay, I don't know.
Chunks. It's like a to-do list. I make to-do lists so I can check off the things on the to-do list. So this is one of the checks, but it's a bigger check and it deserves some happy feelings to get us through the day / our lives.
Where do you get to be proud, Garrett, and excited and happy? If this is one step in many, like, what is the end step where the happy accomplishment happens?
For me, it would be recouping all the money that I gambled away and the money, you know, saving enough to essentially be the equivalent of the amount of debt.
So repaying, catching up on what was lost, and a commensurate amount of savings.
Yeah, because the amount of money that I gambled is not necessarily the amount of money that we owe. I don't know. It's a big number.
You know, these are things, I can't remember if I've shared my philosophy with you before, which is that money often points us toward those places in our lives or in our relationship where we most need to grow and heal. It's like there was a moment, Corey, you shared the news, hey, we've paid off a credit card. And you had a particular emotional response to that, which was happiness and pride and wanting to share that, not just be in that by yourself, but wanting to reach out to Garrett and share that with him. And the feeling that you got back from Garrett was that he was not in that boat with you. And so these are all places where, like, if we can tolerate the frustration of needs being unmet, if we can sort of let that exist for a minute, we can find out a lot more about sort of the work that would need to be done in order to really be in that kind of a moment together. And it may be, Garrett, like once you hear yourself describe, well, if I'm being specific, I feel like the debt has to be repaid. I feel like I have to save this. I feel like maybe this is something I need to explore more in my recovery program, because this seems to be really about maybe feeling guilty about the consequences of my behavior. So I might need to do some work on that, et cetera. So this is where your money and discussions about your money are helping you see the lay of the land, if you will, about how to keep reaching for each other, even through these points of difference or a little bit of friction, even between the two of you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. To be fair, though, the question was how I feel about it, right? It wasn't about necessarily how I feel about how we've done with money or about how I feel like we could do. I think my feeling about how I feel about myself is different than how I feel about us as a couple.
I guess I'm thinking of it more about us in general when I think about it.
After the break, Cora and Garrett talk about having a baby and what they want to model for their child when it comes to money. Hey, it's Anna. With one quick thing before we get back to the show, we are working on an episode about decision fatigue. A year and a half into this pandemic, uncertainty feels like the new constant as the facts on the ground keep changing and we're all trying to figure out how to respond and what contingency plans we need to develop, and it's all gotten pretty tiresome. So we want to help you with one decision you are struggling with. Tell us about it by recording a voice memo and send it to us at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. We are assembling a panel of friends and experts to weigh in and help you out. Maybe it's something as big as whether to move to a new place or change jobs, or whether to cut your hair. Maybe you're trying to suss out whether you need a change or are just really tired. Tell us something you are having a hard time making a choice about. Again, record your voice memo and send it to us at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org.
This is Financial Therapy from Death, Sex, and Money. I'm Amanda Clayman. So a few minutes ago, you were talking about, like, when I asked about, like, what's the mechanism for staying on plan? And you have a sense of, like, each week, Cora looks at sort of where the money needs to go. Garrett, you are talking about like, this was my paycheck and I put some of this over here in savings and here's this, here's a portion of it to go into household expenses, et cetera. And then there's a flurry of texts that get exchanged around sort of the mechanics of what's happening. Is that correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, how would you describe it?
I would describe it as I wake up at Friday morning. It's by the time, normally by the time 8 o'clock rolls around, Cora has received about 98% of the money that I have for that week through Zelle, whichever one. Then, after that, from my perspective, right at this moment, I don't have much input. It doesn't matter. It's not necessarily a negative thing one way or the other. I just, that's where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. And then there is some money, a certain portion of that money that is money that I choose to but either save for specifically for something for myself or just kind of general savings. So that, but that, as far as my understanding is, the only time that there's any like real text exchange like that is for when we don't necessarily follow, like we don't have a parallel thinking about how money is being spent. That's it.
I just want to explore though and make sure this doesn't get lost. Like Garrett is, I'm picking up on maybe some, a feeling of discomfort on some level that this has gone as far as it has sort of into Cora's domain. Would it be fair to say that you want there to be more mutuality in this than there currently is?
Well, I have a certain amount of autonomy. And I also have like almost like not ultimate say, but I basically have the money's being put into my account. So it's like, it's almost like a test every time. Like, all right, I'm doing the right thing. It's actually a good thing for me to be able to do the right thing in that moment and feel like I am too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause we thought about setting up like putting the money that you make into our joint account.
Mm-hmm. So at this point we have all the passwords, of course, are shared and Cora can go look at my account. And if there's activity, there's text sent to her phone and to mine and emails, blah, blah, blah. Anyways. So to answer your question, I feel, I like the level of autonomy that I have as far as where we're at right now. I did feel a little bit reluctant. I get vacation checks, which is a very awesome perk of my job. Mm-hmm. Every 6 months we get vacation checks. So twice a year you get a vacation check. And it's commensurate to how much time you've worked. So you literally get a check based on how hard you work, which is like great, you know, because if you work really hard, you're like, oh, there's going to be like a several thousand dollar check coming. And mine wasn't great because I was laid off so much, but it was like a lot of money. And I did feel a little reluctance giving that over. I have to say, I did feel a little bit like, oh my God, this sucks.
But you made we talked about that. And then you made a choice about that.
Yes. And I took a percentage of the money and I invested it.
Which is not something that I was like super comfortable with, but we talked about having like an amount of money that he could do what he wanted with, like,
yeah,
like donate it to charity or invest it or spend it on donuts.
Yeah. So I have the autonomy of that, which is, I think for right now is good enough.
Yeah.
I think you guys are doing great. Honestly, like that all sounds very healthy, and healthy is not always easy. Healthy choices are often very hard choices. So I think the fact that, like, you know, it hurts to give up that money that feels very yours in a certain situation.
Yes, it does feel very, yeah.
That to acknowledge the pain of that and how that feels is much healthier than cutting ourselves off from it or trying to avoid it completely. Like, that's when we're getting more into like an addiction mentality of I don't want to face the reality of how I feel. I'm going to avoid it. So I'm curious, we are at the conclusion of our work. And in the beginning, there was crisis, right? We are looking at some impending changes ahead for you guys, to say the least. And I'm curious where you guys feel like you are when you think about that moment in time and everything that was happening then versus where you are today.
I had the feeling last night of just being appreciative of both Cora and the natural progression of time. I guess I like things have naturally kind of moved forward and a lot faster. Honestly, a lot of things have progressed a lot faster than I would have anticipated them progressing in a positive way. Both financially and also just in our relationship and just kind of like things getting back to normal a little bit.
What kind of things are you noticing, Garrett?
I'm noticing that we have been able to laugh together a lot more. I mean, we're definitely petty arguers as well, but we've been able to laugh together a lot more as of late, like we would have historically done. And we've had family around a lot, which has been helpful, I think, just to make things feel more grounded. And then we have habits and schedules that are consistent. You know, we're making dinner together every night. It's just these little things that contribute to everything feeling kind of normal again.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that you're feeling closer to Cora?
Yeah, I feel closer to Cora. I mean, the fact that we're having a child together is pretty significant in that equation. I think because it's a big deal and a big responsibility, but it's also a big connection, you know, connector for the two of us. And then we also we've been talking more. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cora, how about for you? What has changed for you in this time?
Yeah, I feel like we are closer and I feel like we can have a lot more of a lightheartedness to our conversations and talk about hard things without it getting as heated all the time. And like, we still have moments where it's hard to talk about certain things, but it's overall gotten a lot better. And I feel like I've gotten a lot more grounded just in how I approach certain things and how I see them, like monetarily and stuff like that, and feeling maybe a little bit more confident in, you know, how I approach it versus like fearful. And, you know, we've been able to, you know, we went up to visit his parents. They have a cabin in northern Michigan, and we went up to visit, and our big family purchase for the summer we decided would be a wind chime. So we picked out a really nice wind chime, and like that was our big exciting thing. And we like have been sitting in the living room listening to it on the porch, and it's been really nice. And I don't know, I feel like a year ago I would have been like, oh my God, like we're not spending money on a wind chime. But then we would have spent money on like a bunch of little things. And like that feels nice. Like, and it's something that like we feel like, ooh, we're grownups and we're gonna buy a wind chime, and then our baby's gonna listen to the wind chime too. And and like we can enjoy that, like truly. And it's nice.
What kind of a household and a relationship and an environment do you want to have between the two of you as you become parents in terms of what you are going to teach this child about money and how it works?
I want to be seen working hard because we do, but I also want to be seen enjoying life because that's the most important thing.
Well, I've never been like really great at saving money historically. So I want to keep fostering that.
Yeah.
And have that be a consistent model for our child.
And what will he hear his mom and dad talking about when they're talking about money?
I think I would like us to be collaborative, seen as being collaborative. We can pretend. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I think that's important because I think that it wasn't ever modeled for us like a healthy way of mutually handling money. Like not one of our parents did that.
Even modeling healthy conflict. And what do we do when we see things differently? Like that there are ways that we can disagree and share our points of view and still respect what our partner has to say and still be able to tolerate those feelings and show up and deal with them honestly, that end up being the best lessons that we can learn about money. Because the things that are hard about money, it's not the encyclopedic stuff. The things that are hard about money are the much more personal aspects of it, the much more emotional aspects of it. And I think that you guys, you know, you were kind of thrown into a crash course about that. But throughout this process, you have consistently really searched yourselves and then looked to each other to try to find answers and to find places to grow and to try to find places to connect and be healthier. And you're certainly allowed to have different points of view. This isn't about one person capitulating to the other and saying, okay, you are correct and I was incorrect. This is the process by which we get to know ourselves better and think about what it's like to not only be an individual, but to be part of the team. So it has really been a joy and an honor for me to share this space. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely tough conversations, but they're really important.
It's been really an opportunity for us to reflect on some things with intention that we might otherwise have brushed under the rug.
Since Garrett and Cora had this final session with Amanda, they've kept paying down their debt, and Garrett's continued having steady work. Cora sold a couple of big art pieces, and they've gotten the $18,000 of gambling debt all the way down to under $3,000. They're hoping to have it all paid off by the time their baby comes in September. Garrett has been sober from alcohol, drugs, and gambling since November of last year. And Amanda Clayman, again, thank you so much for having these conversations with Cora and Garrett on our show. I've learned a lot from listening.
Thanks, Anna. It really was very meaningful to work with Cora and Garrett. You know, every struggle is unique in its own way, but so much of what they're going through is also really universal. And I bet a lot of people can identify.
Yeah, I certainly could. I got a lot from just hearing you talk about using moments of conflict in a relationship as sort of moments of opportunity to realize that there are some things that you could learn about each other.
That's right. And so much of the work becomes how do we recognize the feelings that are coming up and look for the information that those feelings carry with them while still being able to sort of stay in a frame of mind that allows us to be constructive and collaborative and connected.
And less thinking about how we're going to win the argument. Is that what you're saying, Amanda?
Yes, I know. The brain so loves to win an argument.
To hear more from Amanda about her principles for financial intimacy within couples, you can listen to the NPR podcast Life Kit. She's on their most recent episode. Life Kit is available wherever you listen and at npr.org/lifekit.
And if you're struggling with a gambling problem, call the National Problem Gambling Helpline at 1-800-522-4700. Or you can get peer support by going to GAMTALK, that's GAMTALK.org. Finally, if you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, please tell someone. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
This special series was produced by Yasmin Khan and Katie Bishop, with the rest of the team at Death, Sex, and Money. Me, Afi Yellowduke, and Emily Botine, with additional editing by Annabelle Bacon and Jenny Lawton. Thank you to our interns who also helped get this out in the world, Marty Harding and Christy Song, who are moving on from their summer with us. Good luck to both of you.
Andrew Dunn is our mix engineer. Original music by Isaac Jones. You can find me, Amanda Clayman, on Instagram, at Amanda Clayman, and on Twitter, at Amanda Clay.
And you can find all of our past financial therapy episodes with Amanda at deathsexmoney.org/financial therapy. While you are on our website, sign up for our newsletter. That is how we stay in touch with all of you and keep you updated about special projects just like this one. I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.